Week we started talking about principles of parenting, and one of the things that we said was that families are groups of intelligent people that need to be led. A secular society has no authority to lead these people. The church has no right to lead these people. Children themselves are not qualified to lead that group, and thus it really falls on the parents to lead the family. And there's a God-given responsibility entrusted then to parents in doing so. Both parents, as we discussed last week, need to be leaders to their children. They do have different roles and functions. We recognize that. But they do, father and mother both, have a shared objective. And that means that if you're going to bring children into the world, then you need to accept the moral and parental responsibilities that come with that decision or with that action there. It's a solemn responsibility, but I can say a very rewarding one as well. So there is some serious, sobering, you know, heaviness to that, but there's also joy and reward and a great sense of fulfillment as well. Now, virtually every parent will claim that they love their children, and quite honestly, I believe them when they say that. But that doesn't mean that everyone's using the word love in the same way, that we're all on the same page when we talk about that. Just because a person claims to love doesn't mean they understand what real love is or what it requires or how it is to be implemented, and most importantly, how God defines the term. When God talks about love, he talks about it as an acting in the best interest of the other person, whoever they are, even at a sacrifice to yourself. That would be a good, succinct definition of love as God uses it in his scripture. That doesn't mean that that's what everyone else is saying. To many people, loving my children means I will give them whatever makes them happy. And we all know that in reality, it's really what makes the parents happy for them, usually parents trying to live vicariously through their children. But God is not concerned about you being emotionally happy. God is always concerned, and his love, by the way, is always concerned with what is good and what is right. Those are two things you should be thinking about. When you talk about love toward your children or anyone else, for that matter, you're talking about what is good and what is right. And it is God who defines both of those things. Others say, well, love means I will not deny or say no to my children because, you know, I don't want to stand in the way of their freedom or their independence as human beings. You know, that all sounds really noble, but unfortunately, seriously flawed. Because children, honestly, need to hear no. They need to have boundaries. They need structure and discipline. We'll get into some of that in a later lesson. God says no all the time, not only to you, but also later to your children. So they need to be used to hearing that when it is appropriate. Freedom, by the way, does not mean do whatever you want and it's okay. What it really means is you have the right to make your own decisions and about your future. In Matthew 7, verse 13 and 14, Jesus says very clearly, there's a narrow way that leads to life, and there's a wide path that leads to destruction. Your freedom is to choose between those two paths. That's your freedom. It isn't the ability to do whatever you want, and no one can question you or challenge you, like our society keeps trying to impose upon us, that you can do whatever you want, as long as it's what they tell you. It's not that, and so there needs to be some clarification there. And by the way, there's only one path that is good and right, and that's the path that God chooses. Other people say, well, I want my children to make their own decisions, choose all their own convictions, and that sounds good, and there's a time for that. But first of all, they need to be taught, and they need to be trained in what it means to make a good decision, to make a right decision. Secondly, they have to have convictions, but just because someone has convictions doesn't mean that those are good and right convictions. Only when, or only if, they conform to the Word of God are they good and right. You see a theme here? Good, right, love, all connected. And it's God who chooses those. So all said, if you really do love your children, and I hope that you do, well, then teach them about God. If you really love your children, then teach them what God said. And teach them how to have fellowship with God. And teach them how to be on that narrow path, and that the narrow path is the only path that leads to God. You say, why should I do that? Well, because that is good for them. That is right for them, and that is in their very best interest. Any parent that says that they love their children but deliberately refuses to lead them to Christ really doesn't understand what love is. To them, it's an emotional thing, it's a family thing, it's a traditional thing. It's something less than what God talks about. You can't replace spiritual education and training with affection and gifts and good feelings. All you're doing there is just setting your kids up for a fall. And we don't want to do that. We don't want to be setting our kids up for a fall. That's not good parenting, and that's not morally responsible. So we must not be just throwing treats and video games and iPhones and new clothes at our children and calling that love. That's what godless people do, and they're doing it all the time. We can't be doing that. Christians have to live by a higher standard than that of the godless world. Remember our first lesson we talked about, Christian homes in a godless world. Now, I realize, and you should realize too, that even with the best of training, the best of biblical education, the best spiritual direction, adolescent children can still resist and rebel and bring heartache to parents. It can still happen. Train your children up in the way in which they should go and they'll never depart. Well, that's an adage. That's an axiom. That means not an absolute guarantee, but it is most certainly something that you should strive for and is a likelihood if you train them up rightly. But it's not a guarantee. More often problems in adolescence stem from problems in home management. In other words, parents succumbing to problems and pitfalls that are very common but avoidable. And that's the reason I'm talking about all this, is to expose what some of those problems are. Not because they're necessarily happening in your family or in your home, but more as a proactive warning. I'll be just real candid here. I don't know what goes on in most parents' homes here. I don't see you on a day-to-day basis. I don't see you just with your family without, without me being there. Okay, so we're not videotaping you and then critiquing you later. We're just simply saying, here's a good way, and here's some mistakes and pitfalls to avoid. So we're going to talk about those things, and if the shoe fits, of course, wear it, but realize that really what we're active after here is some proactive teaching. First thing we're going to talk about is, and it's a problem that many parents create, and that is the failure to recognize that your child is a child. He or she is not a mini adult. Now, I will tell you, and I'll admit to you, that it's cute, it's adorable, you giggle, when your children do manifest certain adult-like characteristics, and that's fine, I understand that, but it can't be real. In other words, just because your child manifests an adult-like characteristic once in a while doesn't mean that, they've arrived. Now they're adults and we need to treat them like adults in every respect. That's just not true. Children do need to be taught rules and boundaries and responsibilities, the value of hard work. These are all things adults ought to know and be practicing themselves. But you can't assume that just because little Jimmy can make his bed and put away his toys without being told that he's prepared to make all kinds of other adult-like decisions. He still lacks judgment and experience. Here's something very important to remember. You cannot make your children grow up on your schedule. They're going to grow up when they grow up. And that may be disappointing to you as to how long that takes, or they might surprise you and grow up a little quicker. But the fact is, they're going to grow up when they grow up. Your job is not to make them grow up. Your job is to prepare them for the growing up experience and to prepare them for when they are grown-ups. That is your job as a parent. We've been talking about that. We're going to continue talking about that. Think about what Paul said in 1 Corinthians 13, verse 11. He says, when I was a child, I used to speak like a child, think like a child, reason like a child. When I became a man, I did away with childish things. I want you to think about what Paul is just saying there. First of all, he's not saying this in a begrudging, spiteful way, like, yeah, when I was a child, I couldn't be an adult because my mom and dad would have never let me. That's not what he's saying. He's actually recognizing that there's a time to be a child, and that's okay. And it's good and it's natural and enjoy it while you can, because once you leave that childhood, kids, you're never going to be a child again. Well, you might act like one, but that's not the point. You're never going to be in that childhood state again. And so you want to relish that time, enjoy it while you can. Just don't think that you got to grow up overnight because society wants you to or anything else. But the parents need to recognize this too. When your child is a child, he's going to speak like a child, think like a child, reason like a child. When he becomes a man, well, then he'll start doing things differently. But he's not a man yet. Not when he's 6 years old or 8 years old or 12 years old. He's just not a man yet. He's on his way, but he's not there yet. Even in the cases of the best-behaved children, they are still intelligent little people under your roof, under your authority, under your level, parents, of privileges and responsibilities. I understand that many children, especially teenagers, they want all the perks and benefits of adulthood, and yet, as you well know, with little or no responsibility. The problem is not that so much. The problem is that many parents unwittingly oblige that desire. That is not preparing your teens for adulthood. You're simply spoiling them and taking the path of least resistance. You think it's neat that, you know, Jimmy's now able to, you know, go out on his own, do all these things, but if you've not prepared him, then he's not really ready. You've just given him a false sense of readiness. And quite frankly, just because he is a little bit older than he was 5 years ago doesn't mean that he has an adult perception of the world, historical context. You know, he's aware of all the dangers and understands his responsible role in society. Just doesn't. Why? Well, refer to Paul. He's still a child. And he's just not an adult yet. Having said that, your children really ought not to be doing everything that you and your spouse do. They ought not to see everything you see, hear everything you hear, eat everything you eat, drink everything you drink, drive everything you drive, or stay up as late as you stay up. Why? Well, there's reasons for that. First of all, you are adults and they are not. That's a good reason. Secondly, they have not yet earned the right to those things. And thirdly, it's good for them to have to wait. That's why we call them privileges rather than entitlements. If they were entitlements, well, then they're entitled to those things. But they're not. They're privileged to do those things when the time comes. I'll tell you a frightening story. This is absolutely frightening. Some of you will gasp in horror. Honey and I, when we were younger and our kids were very young, we would go through a drive-thru, Starbucks drive-thru, and we would not get our children anything. We would get ourselves coffee, and they had to sit in the back seat and suffer. And it was horrible. And we did that because we were ogres as parents. Well, no, tyrannical ogres, okay? That's not what we were doing. We were simply training them, in essence, that you're kids, and you don't get everything mom and dad do, and quite frankly, we don't have to give you everything that we get. And we want coffee, and they don't need it. So, and we don't have to sit there and, you know, say, oh, well, we're getting coffee. We feel guilty. That's what parents always do. We feel so guilty doing this. Here, let me give you a hot chocolate or a frappuccino. What are you doing giving a five-year-old or a six-year-old a frappuccino? Anyway, another discussion. But my whole point here is that you don't have to give them everything that you want. We went to Jamaica for a week. We left our kids with our grandparents, or their grandparents, rather, and we went away for a week, just the two of us. Didn't bring the kids. Shocking, I know. But it can be done, and it was good for them, and it was good for us. When you treat your children like many adults, you're teaching them that they have already arrived and giving them a false sense of self-awareness, self-importance, and self-achievement, even though they have contributed little or nothing to the world so far. Think about that. You've done nothing, but here's your reward. You've done nothing, but here's your trophy. Isn't that just like what we're seeing right now? Kids in these sports where everybody wins. You know, you've done nothing. You didn't run. You didn't play hard. You didn't make a goal. You did nothing. But here's your trophy for doing so well. And it's just that mentality that is so frustrating and is honestly not helpful to the kids. So this creates this fragile and self-inflated ego that will not be able to endure shocking realizations later in life that you're not as amazing as your parents led you to believe. And of course, we saw that in this nationwide post-election temper tantrum. What an excellent case study for exactly what we're talking about. In Matthew chapter 16, verse 24, Jesus says, if you wish to come after me, the first thing he said was, you need to deny yourself. And that is a biblical, spiritual principle that is critical for discipleship to Jesus Christ. How are you going to teach your own children if you refuse to deny them when they're young? Just because their friends have things and their other parents have things and give things to their children, you think, how can we be good parents if we don't give these same things to our kids? And how can you parents teach your children self-denial, to be denied these privileges, if you yourself aren't practicing self-denial when it needs to be practiced there? You've got to practice that yourself before you prepare your children for that thing. Let me show you a couple of passages here. This is talking about a man becoming an elder. And Paul says that that man should not be a new convert so that he will not become conceited, stuck on himself, basically. Just think about that. And you're saying, well, yeah, but that's a man. He's talking about a man. Yeah, that's my whole point. If he's saying that about a man, that he should not be a new convert before given certain responsibilities, how much more so should it be for children? Here's another passage talking about deacons, that these men must also first be tested. It is unwise and unbiblical to put a man in a position of responsibility when he is not ready or trained or tested. You need to carry those principles into parenting here. If it is true for a grown man that he is not ready for responsibility until he's trained, tested, and experienced, then that means it should be that way for your children as well. Doesn't that just stand to reason? And not only that, but it is biblical. Hebrews chapter 5, verse 11 through 14. I'm not going to read this whole thing, but the writer here is trying to get into some difficult things to say, and he says in verse 11, concerning him, Melchizedek, we have much to say, and it is hard to explain because you have become dull of hearing. Implied, young, untaught, inexperienced people ought not to be put in positions that require seasoned, trained, experienced skills. Make the application. I think a lot of teenagers become dull of hearing over time. They've been taught, they've been trained, but they're just not listening. Well, you shouldn't be rewarding those teenagers then with all kinds of gifts. Here, you haven't listened to me. You haven't been responsible. You haven't obeyed a single thing. You've been lazy and slothful and irresponsible, but here's some new clothes, or here's a new car, or here's, you know, a college education, or whatever it is that you want to grant to your child because they've been such a, well, poor example of everything you've taught them. You see what we're talking about here. They need to learn the lessons, and they need to learn them sometimes the hard way. I'll get into that in just a moment. So here's some practical things here. You might call them suggestions, but they are based upon what we have just said. If you are invited to an adult get-together, that means it's a get-together for adults, okay? Usually when someone says, this is an adult get-together, that means don't bring your kids, hire a sitter. It means no children. You say, well, I adore my children, so everyone else will too. Not necessarily true. Oh, yeah, you adore your children. Not necessary that everyone will like you do. Also, the children will survive without you. It's happened. And then also, both you and the kids need that separation from each other. You need that. It's a good, healthy thing. I'm not talking about long-term, 6 months or something. I'm talking about an evening separated from each other. That's a good thing. When you go to a dinner or a potluck, the adults ought to dish up first, and the children who are old enough to dish up their own food can wait. We did this with our kid, and somehow they survived. And they actually got food, but it was after the adults did. And when an adult enters a room with limited seating, the children ought to know to give up their seat to them. You're teaching them there to respect authority, to respect adults, and to respect age. You say, well, someday they're going to be older in age, and yeah, that's true, someday, but not yet. There's a need to wait. It's called self-denial. We're told in Leviticus chapter 19, verse 32, God saying, you shall rise up before the gray-headed and honor the aged. You shall revere your God. I am the Lord. Well, that is true. That's an old law, but it's a timeless principle. A generation of children that does not respect the adults or the aged spells decline and disaster for that society's future. And by the way, you don't have to apologize to little Jimmy and Susie if you are training them to be patient and giving them discipline and acting in their best interest. By discipline, I simply mean structure and boundaries in that case. It's not demeaning or abusive. It is realistic. And by the way, it prepares them to be more like God. That is part of your role, is to prepare them to be imitators of God. Your responsibility as a parent is to keep your children away from things, people, dangers that harm or destroy your children. And that's why parents will say, well, don't talk to strangers and don't walk alone and beware of your surroundings and don't take drugs and don't smoke and don't go to keggers and don't run with bad company and do make friends with the big kids. We always taught our kids this because, well, they were kind of small and we were too. And so we always said, make friends with the big kids, and they did, and that worked out really well. Okay, because the big kids take that on like, yeah, I can take care of you, and you don't have to worry about the bullies. All right, so there's something to think about. So you're just giving things to your kid. That's all excellent advice, and yet many of the same parents will do something else. They'll give their children cell phones and iPads, access to the internet and social media accounts and everything without realizing that these things, without proper management, without proper oversight, are just as dangerous as all those other things. In fact, sometimes even more, because they're more insidious. By that, I simply mean that they kind of get into a child's mind more so than some of these other things will. And that can be very destructive. The present generation and the way things are going, likely all upcoming generations, are not only obsessed with technology, they are often addicted to it. In fact, so much so that they cannot even imagine life without it. They don't know about life without it. In fact, they are being indoctrinated by technology. It's teaching them something. And many parents are oblivious to that aspect. They think, oh, it's just an iPhone or a computer or iPad or TV or whatever. They don't recognize that there's information that is going into that child that that child is absorbing. And is being saturated with a certain agenda, a certain message there, as well as just, you know, random facts and trivia and all sorts of things. I know what parents are going to say. Parents are going to come back and say, well, we put parental controls on everything. Some of that does work, and it does help to some extent. But I wager, if I were a betting man, that most kids here are savvy enough by trial and error, by accident, or because of their own friends at school, they have already found a way around all those things. It's not that hard. I've done it myself. I've actually put some of those things to the test. It's not terribly hard. I am not a computer whiz, and I could figure it out. If I can do it, I'm sure your 12-year-old or even your 8-year-old can probably do it as well. Now, I want to stress here, technology by itself is not evil, but it's very much like handing your child a running chainsaw. It's something that is meant for good. It serves a purpose, but it can easily be abused and misused. And when it is abused or misused, it can destroy your child's mental, emotional, and most importantly, spiritual well-being. It can actually cause damage to their soul. So think about that. Would you hand your 8-year-old a running chainsaw? Probably not. Why would you hand them something else and then say, go play? Just here, take this device here that's teaching you all kinds of stuff about the world, inviting you as a gateway into all kinds of activities, things we would never teach you at home, never do at home, but here you go. Why would you do that? Again, proper management and oversight is necessary. I have found the internet to be very useful as an information resource. I do sometimes research if I have certain sites that I go to, academic sites. I've fixed my car with YouTube videos before. Roy and I fixed an iPhone with a 19-step process on how to replace the screen. Actually, Roy did most of the work. But I'm just saying that it is also, despite all the good that it can produce there, it is a gateway to very inappropriate, irreverent, and pornographic information. In fact, out there on the internet is pure satanic evil. And your kids aren't smart enough or exercise the judgment or the discernment to understand always what evil is. I'm not saying they're unintelligent. I'm saying they're inexperienced. they haven't yet learned things. Okay? There is a difference between those two things. Your job as leaders, parents, is to train your children how and when and how often to use these things, by the way, including in their teenage years. Don't think that just because your child turns 13 that suddenly they're entitled to all these things and there's not going to be an issue. Teach your children to have a healthy respect for technology. Use it to their advantage, and that's fine. But don't let it be a driving force of their life. Unfortunately, the reason why parents do all these things and do give their children all these devices is because they themselves are already obsessed and addicted to the very same things. So not only do they not want to call themselves out, but they think that somehow this is normal, all parents do this, and so I'm going to do it with my kids too. And that's really an irresponsible way to parent your children, is to say, well, the rest of the world is doing it, so I should too. You don't want to follow the rest of the godless world in what it's doing for its children. Children whose real parents are an iPhone or a cell phone or a video game, they lack basic social skills. They lack basic communication skills. And they are not taught critical thinking or how to process information because it's something else is doing it all for them. By the way, if you just think about it, just logically, if a child is sitting there, say, playing a video game for several hours or on the internet or iPhone or whatever he's doing, all that is just input, stimuli, central input or central stimuli. There's very little, if any, output. You say, well, yeah, but the thumb. No, I'm talking about output as far as communication, output as far as intelligent, meaningful dialogue, output as far as sharing and exchanging with another human being. It's very little of that, if anything. And so that what you're getting then is an overload of input and very little output. No wonder these kids, when all the games go away and you sit them down with each other, they don't know what to do. They kind of stare at each other sometimes. They go, oh, don't know what to say. Well, they don't. They literally don't know what to say because they've been communicating with technology up until now. Now, that's an extreme example, of course, but it's something that is happening. Some kids live in virtual reality. They cannot understand or relate to the world except through texting, video graphics, or digital interfacing. Imagine trying to teach a generation of children like that when they grow up about Jesus Christ. And then you start looking at the future of the church and the damage that has been caused, and that we have to somehow overcome all that first before we can even talk about godly biblical principles. My advice is very simple. Just simply limit the time, the content, the access that they have to technology. And that includes, by the way, TV and social media. Take your children to places or events where there are no iPhones or iPads. Spend time outside with nature. Spend time inside in conversation with people. Or spend time in your own imagination. Teach the kids this in a good book. In other words, exercise their imagination there in that way. Deliberately do things as a family that are not dependent upon some form of technology. Go to the mountains, go to the ocean, go to Puget Sound. We live in a really neat spot right here that we have access to all those different places. We're in proximity to them all. Find a park, find a playground, in our case, find a cemetery. Those are fascinating places, even for kids. Find something outside the neighborhood and spend some time there. Go for a picnic, go on a hike, go on a nature walk, go on a bike ride, go on a scavenger hunt. Be creative, parents. You're going to have to. It's for your children's well-being. Don't let movies and TV become the electronic pacifier or the electronic babysitter, the path of least resistance, because this is what parents do. I've watched them. We've done it ourselves unwittingly. You know, here's a movie. Go watch a movie. We're going to do stuff. Here's a movie. Oh, adults are coming over. Here's a movie. Go watch a movie. Constantly sending the kids to watch a movie, watch a movie, watch a movie. Well, what are you saying? First of all, well, we're really, rather you watch a movie than sit here and listen and talk with us. How about if those kids were able to sit there and listen to the adults have a meaningful conversation? By the way, a dying art in itself, meaningful conversation. What if they were to hear you talk about God and hear you talk about spiritual things, or even talk about the challenges of life, or even talk about, you know, when they were young and the things that they experienced, you know, the time before, back in the darkness, you know, before computers. What if they were to talk about those things and those children were to hear those things? When we talk about evangelism, we're talking about a people conversing with other people. If our children grow up not knowing how to converse, then they won't know how to evangelize. And once again, causing severe damage to the church of the future. There are two types of parenting that do not work, will not work, and yet are increasingly popular. The first is called helicopter parenting. You've probably heard about it. These are parents who are unwilling to let their children feel pain, experience sorrow, be confronted with any kind of form, a kind of unhappiness, or they don't want them to fail, they don't want them to fall, so they're always hovering over, circling over, ready to swoop in and rescue their child should they shed a tear. Helicopter parenting is based on two major premises. Both of them are false and damaging. The first of those is, I have a sacred duty to protect my child from anything unhappy or unpleasant. The answer is, no, you don't. We could ask the question, where did you get that from? Who told you that? And they would just come up with, well, this is what I feel. So it's your opinion, basically, that's driving all this. That's all it is. You do have a right, a responsibility to protect your children from physical harm, from abuse, and from exploitation. You do have that. But to allow them to not experience anything that might draw a tear or to prevent them from learning important life lessons, why would you do that? You're not helping your child. You know that God allows adults to fail and to fall and to suffer as part of the learning experience. Not because he hates us, not because he's a bad parent, not because he doesn't care, but because we need those things. We need them. We need to experience them. Turn with me, if you would, to James chapter 1, the opening of James's letter after his brief introduction. He says in verse 2, James chapter 1, verse 2, consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. Let endurance have its perfect result so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. Apply this, of course, in principle now to your children, and recognize that your children will not become better people unless they are faced with various trials. They need to experience that. That is the route to completion. The route to endurance is to go through those various trials and not to have you rescue them. They're not going to become better people if they're always shielded and rescued from those things. They're going to be spoiled thinking that nothing bad ought to happen to them. And then when it does happen to them, they don't know what to do. The second false premise is that my children deserve the most pampered, joy-filled, toy-filled, blissful existence possible. Well, that's just not real life. Anyone who's an adult has quickly learned that is not real life. All you're doing is setting up your children for a huge fall so that when they go to college and get married and get a job and everyone doesn't cater to them like you've been catering to them, they are wholly unprepared to deal with that. No wonder young adults are having meltdowns. No wonder they can't handle this, why they're sobbing when their president doesn't get elected or reelected or whatever else, because they just don't know how to handle defeat. They don't know how to handle failure. No one's ever taught them that. Everyone's been handing them stuff all their life, and suddenly they didn't get their way. What do you do? Boom, meltdown. And that can all be avoided in the home. Parents who are constantly rescuing their children from their own mistakes do a huge disservice. Basically, what they're saying is, little Jimmy or Susie, no matter what you do, someone else will accept responsibility for your mess and will clean up your mess. Now, imagine those kids growing up into adults, and imagine trying to teach those adults to be disciples of Jesus Christ later on. Discipleship, you've probably heard of it. It talks about responsibility, personal responsibility, and work and effort and things that don't go right all the time and confrontation with people who are in sin and difficult scenarios. And how are you going to teach that to these kids who have grown into adults? The point here is teach your children ahead of time how to reason, how to act, and how to respect other people, and then let them learn through trial and error how to implement that teaching. Don't wait, by the way, until they're 13, 14, 15 years old to do this. You need to do it when they're young. Let them implement that and let them fall if necessary. Don't let them be destroyed. I'm not saying that. Would never say that. But do let them fall. It's not going to kill them. It's actually going to help them, believe it or not. The second common, popular, and hopeless parenting method is a newer one, been identified as lawnmower parenting or, in extreme cases, bulldozer parenting. Instead of hovering and swooping down from the sky like a helicopter parent, here is someone who's out front mowing or blazing or smoothing the trail for their children. We're going to take away all the bad things, all the wrinkles. Here's a rock, here's a root, here's a branch, here's a bump in the road. We're going to smooth everything out so that your children can just walk down this nice groomed trail and not have to deal with anything bad or negative. And such parents think that they need to do everything possible to avoid their children from having to experience hardship. And so the plan is to remove all the difficulties and obstacles so that they will have just a blissful, effortless childhood. And such parents are going to do the things that I'm describing here. They're going to give their children whatever they want. They're going to feel compelled to be with their child, present for every moment, every little thing, every little detail of their children's life. They don't make their children work for anything. They'll do their children's homework because they don't want their children to fail, and so they do the homework so they won't fail. They'll do their children's school projects. I have two words to say on that: whiteboard. And I think every parent here knows with fear what I'm talking about, okay? They'll do their Eagle Scout project or Girl Scout project, whatever it is. They'll do their children's chores because they're, the kids are busy playing or they're at school sports. They'll buy the teen's car. They'll pay for the teen's insurance. They'll pay for the teen's tickets. They won't hold their children accountable or responsible for much of anything. They don't allow their children to face the consequences of their own poor decisions, their own laziness, their own irresponsibility. They don't allow their children to fail or to fall. What does this do? This prepares children for adulthood, right? Because adulthood is all about everyone blazing the trail for you so you can walk in an effortless, blissful adulthood. You know that that's not true. So what you're doing is you're allowing your children, if you were to be one of these parents, to coast through childhood without having to really work for anything, fully expecting mom and dad to provide every step of the way. And in effect, you're cheating your children out of learning how to navigate their own life. All I got to do, the child thinks, is just follow this path that mom or dad has created for me. And that fails to prepare the children for what's coming. The professors in college couldn't care less about what you have bulldozed for your children. The military is not going to care. The creditors are not going to care. Your employer is likely not going to care. The IRS certainly will not care. God doesn't really care what has been done for you as far as pampering. And that creates then a fantasy life that is blown to pieces later on. Children turned adults are unable to cope with the challenges, unable to cope with being denied. The fact is, and you should know this, if you haven't figured it out already, life is not a well-manicured lawn, free from rocks and ruts and weeds. Life is not a well-smoothed path, free from upsets and denials and disappointments and unfairness. Children not only need to learn this, but they need to know how to deal with that in a responsible, realistic manner. The church of tomorrow cannot function with congregations of people brought up in this way that I'm talking about, entirely untrained, undisciplined, unprepared to fulfill the mission of the church, which is discipleship. You notice I keep coming back to, where is this all taking us? If we follow these prescriptions, these secular, godless, and foolish prescriptions, where is that taking us? It's on a wide path. And where does the wide path lead? It leads one place, to destruction. Again, your job as a parent is not to gratify your children with endless pampering and happiness. Rather, it is to prepare him or her for life, and especially what comes after life, and that would be their meeting with God. That's your job as a parent. I want to end with what I talked about last week here in Colossians chapter 3, verse 20. Children, be obedient to your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. It does not say, children, be pampered and spoiled and overprivileged by your parents, because that's not pleasing to the Lord. But in order for this life prescription to work, we need parents to obey God, and then those parents to teach their children what God says and to instill godly principles and values and lessons in those children's life. That is God's plan. That is what he says over and over, either directly or more often indirectly through the guiding principles that we've been talking about. If you love your children, then serve your children's best interest. Not what you perceive is their best interest or what they think is their best interest, but rather what God says is their best interest. Any parent can win their children's hearts with treats and gifts and affections. Anyone can do that. Christian parents ought to be looking far beyond that and asking this question, but how can I save my children's souls? How can I save their soul? What can I do or what should I be doing in order to prepare them for that? Even if you win their hearts, but don't prepare their souls for the future, you have set them up for failure. Oh, they're going to be your buddies, your friends, and all that. And, you know, my kids, my best friend, I hear parents say that. You know, if your best friend is an 8-year-old, then you've got issues. But nonetheless, the whole idea there is that they just want to be all chummy and cuddly with their kids. And to some extent, to the affectional side of that, I get that. But that's not preparing them for reality. It's certainly not preparing them for their spiritual future. Jesus said that we are the salt and the light, not just of the world, but of our own families. We're the salt and the light of our own families. And if the salt has become tasteless, he says, what good is it? If the light is extinguished or put under a bushel, what good is it? Make sure your children know what is good, what is right, what is true, what is of God. They've got to hear that from you. As I started out, I'll say again, please take this series in a spirit in which it is intended. I'm not saying you're doing all these things or any of these things. I'm not here to point fingers or accuse or to judge. I'm simply trying to provide some information and some balance and also some warning. Parenting is an awesome responsibility. It's also a sacred responsibility. What we're doing today, what we are doing with our children today, will affect the world tomorrow, will affect the church tomorrow. What are we doing to prepare them for that? A lot more to say. We'll get into that later on. Not now. We've said enough. If there's anyone here this morning who has a spiritual need to become a Christian, we certainly want to give you opportunity. If you're ready to be baptized into Christ, that's where the blessings are. That's where forgiveness is found. That's where eternal life is promised, in Christ. If you're ready to get in Christ through your obedience to the word and through what God does for you, we would love for you to become a Christian. Or if you have spiritual needs that we can pray for, let us help as you come forward, if necessary, and as we stand and sing the song that Aaron has selected for us.